I'd like to do this morning is a sort of like an introduction to Muktzah. So I found this article and I wanted to share it with you, and it's largely based on the Beis Yosef. Rav Yosef Kairo himself actually wrote a psicha. He wrote an introduction to Siman Shin Ches, which is dedicated to the laws of Muktzah. And in this psicha, in this article, he writes six categories of muktzah.
Six.
That's his magic number, six. We're going to soon see that really the six divides up into at least two different categories. It's not really all six that belong to one category. So number one, if you want to write a number one on the side of your page, is muktzah machmas gufo. And that's going to be the classical case of muktzah, which means something that's neither kelim nor ochlim, and it's avonim, it's etzim, it's ofar, it's chol. So you're talking about pieces of wood, you're talking about sand on the beach, you're talking about stones, all of the like. That's called muktzah machmas gufo. And that's something that, generally speaking, unless you designate it for use, is not omid l'shimush. It's not something usable. You know, you don't function. It's neither a vessel nor is it ochel. So it's not edible, and you can't use it as a kli. Then we get to the second category, which is called muktzah machmas isur, the classical case of muktzah machmas isur. Is the case of a ner dolik. So you have a candle that's lit. And in this case, what happens is you don't want to use it for anything else, because if you do so, if you take away the oil, as we're going to learn today, Mirtz Hashem, you are violating the Isur of Kibui by depleting the shemen in the ner. So in order to avoid doing so, you put it out of your mind. That's called muktzah. You know, in the first category, which is Eitzim Vavonim, they you don't have to actually put it out of your mind. You know, it's out of your mind. Here already you're talking about something that's either a kli in the case of the Nair itself, or food, Oakland in the case of the Shemen. So you don't, you know, unless you put it out of your mind, then it's not Muktzah, it's Mukhan. But why do you put it out of your mind? Because you can't have access to it. It's designated for Isur, right? Because it's lit. It's a lit candle. Now, what happens when the candle goes out? That's going to be our discussion for today. But just as an introduction, now here he says that there's another case of muktzah machmas Isur, and that's called muktzah lemitzvah. And we spoke, if you recall, about the schach in the case of a sukkah. We spoke about the chutim of tzitzis. And this muktzah applies the whole week long. I mean, you could even talk about Ner Chanukah. I mean, certainly Ner Chanukah, at least 7 out of 8 days of the Ner Chanukah, or at least 6, I should say, are not Shabbos or Yontif, and yet there's a din of muktzah. So this muktzah applies not only on Shabbos, but also on Chol. And once the object was designated for a mitzvah, you're not allowed to use it for your own purposes.
Can you use it for another mitzvah?
Well, that's going to be Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. I don't know. I think we touched on it here in this classroom. The question is, Madlika mi ner l'ner? You'll add a light one ner Chanukah from the other ner Chanukah. So that's Machlokas Rav and Shmuel.
Or use the oil of the Chanukah for a Shabbos candle.
Right. So the question is whether Bizui Mitzvah applies when you use a mitzvah for another mitzvah. That's an issue. Now we get to the third category of muktzah. And this is a category that we haven't even touched on, but let's put it out there in this introduction, this overview. It's called muktzah machmas chisaron kis. So this is something that is sensitive. It's a vessel, an object that's very sensitive. In other words, if you misuse it, it loses its value, and it's something that's valuable. So you don't want to you want to make sure that nobody plays around with it. He gives the example of a sakin shel shechita. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of seeing how the shochet is so careful, and if he takes his knife to the rav will check it over and over again, you know, to make sure that there's no pegimos, there's no little pieces in the knife that aren't absolutely sharp. So you don't want people playing around with a sakin shel shechita. It's a very expensive item. You don't want to have to replace it. And since you're not going to use it for Shabbos, then you designate it for shechita, for chol. And if, let's say, on Shabbos, all of a sudden you decided that you don't have a knife to cut up your meat or to slice up your vegetables or fruits, and now you want to use the sakin shel shechita, you can't do so. That's because of muktzah machmas chisaron kis. Could be that documents fit into this category, passports, different things that you don't use during Shabbos, and you don't want to use them during the week either, unless you absolutely have to, because you don't want it to get destroyed or lost. These are objects that are difficult to replace if they're lost. That's called chisaron kis. Now, I'm not sure exactly how severe of an iser muktzah this is, meaning we're going to see that Reb Shimon rejects muktzah, but he agrees to muktzah in many, many cases. For example, Rabbi Shimon would agree to muktzah machmas kufo and to muktzah machmas isur, at least as long as the ner is dolig. But I'm not sure if Rabbi Shimon would agree to muktzah machmas chisaron kis. Now, at this point, what I would do is I would skip the next category for a moment. We'll come back to it. And you'll see basis ledavar ha'asur. This already is something that even Reb Shimon would agree to, as he agrees to the first three categories of machmas gufo and machmas isur and machmas mitzvah. He would also agree in the case of basis ledavar ha'asur. So basis ledavar ha'asur, we discussed, if you have a receptacle that receives mukta in it, like for example a kli and there's a beitza which is mukta inside the kli, or we had the case of the sal and the afrochim which are mukta because of bali chayim, they sit on the sal, that makes the sal a basis ledavar ha'asur. He gives an example here of shulchan, and on the shulchan he places mos, he places money on the table. That makes the table into a basis ledavar ha'asur. So that's category number 5. Now what's missing here on this list, and I'm not sure why the Beis Yosef omitted it, is number 1, mukta machmas mius, something that's absolutely repulsive to him. And that doesn't seem to appear on this list. And then, what else did I thought was missing here? So he has muktzah machmas, let's go over it. Muktzah machmas kufo, muktzah machmas isur, muktzah machmas mitzvah, muktzah machmas chisaron kis, and a basis ledavar ha'asur. Oh yeah, he doesn't have bali chayim here on this list. I don't know why. Yeah. Bali Chaim Lechor should have been a classical case, a category of Muktzah. So for some reason he leaves that out.
He's an animal lover.
And now we have the 6th category, which again appears as the 5th category on his list, but I would put it as the 6th category, and that's Klisha Malachto Le'isra. That's the most complicated of all, because as I mentioned yesterday, there's an entire perek in Masechta Shabbos that's dedicated to the topic of Tiltul Kelim. And a Kli Shemalachta L'Isur classically, like you remember I mentioned the case of scissors that are used to shear the wool off the back of the camel or the back of the sheep, that kind of an object is called a Kli Shemalachta L'Isur. And I'm not sure that it's muktzah. It could be that it's not muktzah because it's a kli, and you could find many uses for this scissors. Although again, it's designated for the use to shear wool, but you could also use it for other things. So it has many different functions. So I don't know that that's really muktzah in the classical sense. It's not like eitzim v'avonim that has no function. It's not something that is Right now you can't touch it because of an isur. And it's not necessarily chisaron kis. It may be a scissors or shearing scissors that cost a couple extra bucks, but it's not nishkefelik, as we say. It's not going to be catastrophic if he uses that. And not only that, if he uses it, I'm not sure that he'll in any way damage the scissors. He gives an example here of kurnus shel nafachim. Kurnus is a sledgehammer. You know, this very large hammer that the carpenters use. And again, if he uses it to crack his nuts open on Shabbos, nothing terrible is going to happen to the hammer. He's not going to ruin it, and there's no financial loss. But since he generally uses it in his shop, you know, his carpentry shop, that makes it into a kli shel lachtalisa. I'm not sure that that's mukta. The Beis Yosef, for some reason, categorizes it as a category of mukta. I would have said that it's not mukta, it's a separate Easter tiltil kalim. Because if you take a look at his paragraph, he writes, b'shas ha-tzorech mefatzea bo egozim, which is called a heter tiltil tzorech gufo. In other words, if you need this sledgehammer for something that's mutar on Shabbos to prepare your food, then you're allowed to. You're allowed to take the sledgehammer. So you see, it's not mukta. Mukta is not movable, is not permissible, it's tzorech gufo. So I would have said there are five categories listed here, with a sixth category, which is an isur tiltul, but it's not really mukta. And the difference is that mukta can't move under any circumstance, whereas tiltul can be alleviated for the sake of letzorech gufo, letzorech makoma. Alright. Yes.
Am I correct in understanding that all of these different types of mukta that we're saying now, that the Beit Yosef is saying,
right,
is like the majority opinion, and just Rabbi Shimon, we're going to find occasionally not agreeing with some of it?
Well, right. The truth is that pretty much you could say that Rabbi Shimon agrees with everything here on the list. Again, the one that I have to prove to you, and that's going to be a challenge for me, is Chisaron Kis. But I'm pretty sure that eventually we'll be able to prove that even Chisaron Kis is also according to Rabbi Shimon. Because notice here, if you take a look, Shmuel, he doesn't mention Migu at this point. It's going to come up soon. But when we get to Migu, meaning what happens if the reason for Mukta was removed, like for example the case of Bosses L'Dover Asur, that in the middle of Shabbos the Moos fell off the Shulchan. Or for example the case of Mukta Machmas Isur, in the middle of Shabbos the wind blew out the candle and it's no longer the Shemen or the Ner is no longer Mukta Machmas Isur, there's where Reb Shimon would disagree. And he suspends the principle of Migu, and he says that even though entering into Shabbos it was Mukta, it loses its status as Mukta once the reason for the Mukta is removed. But as far as the categories themselves, and maybe, Shmuel, that would answer my question, why did he omit the category called Mukta Machmas Mius? And maybe the answer is because we paskin like Rav Shimon, the Lesley Mukta, and he rejects Mukta Machmas Mius. So that category just doesn't appear in the Beis Yosef's overview of Dinei Mukta. The case of Bali Chaim is more complicated. I'm not sure why he omits Bali Chaim, because Rav Shimon, I think, agrees to Bali Chaim. That's what we saw in Tosfos on Daf
Mem.
Say it again?
Graf Shel Re'i. When you have like
Graf Shel Re'i, I think is Mutter B'Tiltul.
Right.
So he's talking about that which is also B'Tiltul.
In any case, doesn't all that fall into Machmat Gufo?
So now I'm not exactly sure what question you're asking, but let me ask my question. I think it's okay. Your question, and you'll tell me if it is. Isn't there really, in truth, only one category of mukta? I mean, you could take all these six categories and collapse them into the first category, namely mukta machmas gufo. And what does that mean, mukta machmas gufo? Something that doesn't have any purpose, it doesn't have any use. And in truth, all these cases could really, arguably, fit into that category. Because what use do you have in the case of mukta machmas isur from a ner dolek? You don't have any use for it because you'll violate Melecha Shabbos. What use do you have for chisaron kis? Because you locked it up in your professional closet because you don't want to use those utensils, and therefore it really has no shimush. And for that matter, even a kli shel lachtal isur arguably might be like eitzim v'avonim, like mukta machmas gufo. So that's a fascinating question unto itself. Now we're up to the paragraph that starts the din, if you're following in the text, which is on the right side towards the bottom. And he says that the first four categories of mukta are different than the fifth category of mukta, and that's what we tried to point out earlier. And he quotes the Sugya Kufchav Gimel, which is the parak called Kol HaKelim that I told you is dedicated to the law of Issa Tiltil the Kelim. And he points out that whereas in the first four categories of Mukta, we're dealing with something that's absolutely Mukta, meaning you cannot move them under any circumstances. When we get to the fifth category, there you're allowed to move them for the sake of Litzarech Gufo and Litzarech Makoma. So again, I don't understand why he wedges the fifth category in between the fourth and the sixth. I would have put it for the end. In other words, I don't know why Bosses Ledover also got pushed down, got demoted to being the last on this list, the sixth. I would have had it as number five. I would have demoted Kli Shemalach Leisa, which is Mutav Tiltul Litzarech Gufo Litzarech Makom. In any event, the summary of this last paragraph, Vidin, is a sugya at the beginning of Perek Kol HaKelim. Mamish, a long, long sugya. Okay. Now we get to the real kishkes of it. Why is Mukta asur? Now at this point, in our discussion, we are unaware of Rashi and Beitza. Rashi and Beitza is going to come up on your next page, which I think is on the flip side, 249. So, leaving Rashi and Beitza out, everybody agrees that Mukta is only Durabana. And if Durabana invented Mukta, we want to know why they did so. And here we have what I call the classical answer to this question in all the Rishonim. It's based on a Sugya in Shabbos. And then we have the Rambam. The Rambam, for some reason, in this question, puts on his thinking cap and he comes up with the most ingenious, creative ideas and new principles as to why the Chachamim prohibited Mukta. And he leaves out the most common and obvious answer to the question, why Mukta? I don't know. It's a very strange Rambam. So the Beis Yosef quotes the Rambam and the Ravid. It's in Perek Chof Dalet Mihilchas Shabbos. And here's the language of the Rambam. Asru chachamim l'taltel miktsas dvarim b'shabbos k'derech shu oseh b'chol. Certain things, and this introduction here, the Rambam, is very important to understand the next part of the Rambam. Certain things that we usually move around during the week, the Rabbanan said, don't move them around on Shabbos. That's an unusual style in the Rambam. Usually the Rambam doesn't ask himself a question and answer it, but that's what he's doing here. What is the basis? What motivated Chazal to institute this Isur Mukta? Kidei shelo yehei ayom ki yom chol b'enof. Wow, a whole new pshat. This is not the Ravid, not all the Rishonim, but they all say it's because we're afraid of Hotzah, that you pick something up, you start moving it, you'll end up taking it out into the Rishus HaRab. No, forget about all that. The Rambam is not Gerz that. He doesn't have it. But rather, the Rambam wants to give you what's called a Shvisa HaNikeres. And that's a term I should really be writing on the board, but I thought that Don was coming in today, but he didn't come in, so... Do you want to write it out on your own and save me the hassle of having to erase the board and then rewrite it?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, it's called Shvisa Hanikeres. Do you need a pen?
Yes, I do.
Okay, here. Harvey, write it down and then I'll get the pen back from you because I'm always looking for a pen, so if I can get it back. Okay, Shvisa Hanikeres. Now what's Shvisa Hanikeres? Shvisa Hanikeres means that a person has to rest on Shabbos in an obvious way, in an apparent way. If he continues to do what he does during the week, then he's not experiencing the Shabbos as it's meant to be experienced, as a special unique day. Now you could always ask, well, how do you experience Shvisa Nikeres? What makes the day special in the way I experience it? Maybe the Chacham could have said I should stand on my head, I should do somersaults in the air. maybe I should go down to the beach and enjoy the sun. I don't know, there are many different ways of enjoying Shabbos. You know, everybody has their own formula as to how maybe I should go down and schmooze with my neighbors. You know, they could have obligated me in any number of things. But what they wanted to do was, the Chacham wanted to put you into a state of Shvisa, into a state of non-action. The Torah does that by telling you to refrain from what? 39 categories of malach. But you know what? A person could refrain from, abstain from 39 categories of malach, and it's not a shvisa nikeres. Maybe he's a pensioner, you know, maybe he's already, or he has a day off, you know, or it's a holiday season, you know, now in America, and I probably in Australia as well, probably in England as well, it's a holiday season, no?
Could be.
It could be that today already they go back to work in some countries. I don't know. But some people take off the whole week. You know, they go fly all over the world. They go on vacation. So it's quite possible that a person could be, you know, could be out of a job and he doesn't do any of the malachas. You know, he's a carpenter, but he has no clients. You know, that are commissioning him to build a table for him. And if he's a painter, you know, he has no clients who commission him to paint their houses or whatever it is. So he's a goof offer, you know. He's now like Dobie Gillis, you know. He's not doing any work, you know what I'm saying? So where's the Shmisa Nikeres? So what the Chachamim wanted to do was, they wanted to guarantee that a person is in a state of mind or a state of experience in which he goes beyond Shvisa, beyond abstaining from the 39 Malachas. And where did they attack? You know, they pounced upon a certain area of human behavior and said, abstain from this, and that's Tiltul. You know, we spend so much time moving things around, and on Shabbos, you know, you can literally spend your whole Shabbos moving things around, so certain things you can't move around on Shabbos. And that already puts you into a different state of being. So the Rambam says, Mipnei ma nagu bisu zeh kedei shelo yehei hayom ki yom chol bienov. It's like a weekday. V'nimtza shelo shavas. He didn't rest on this day. Ubatel atam, and he therefore nullifies the principle. Tam here means the principle. Shenemar b'Torah, which is formulated in the Torah, l'man yanuach. The Torah says, "I'm giving you the Shabbos in order that you should rest on Shabbos." So that's number one. So the Rambam wants a person to be in a state of menucha. And the Chachamim filled in the missing blanks. How do we guarantee that you're in a state of menucha? You're not moving things around. Now the Rambam goes on and gives a second reason for muksa. Also very creative. He says, V'chein, and furthermore, Iyataltil kelim shemalachton le'isa yovali de malach. If you start, you know, tampering with let's say shearing knife, you know, shearing scissors, who knows, maybe you'll accidentally come to shear to use it in the wrong way. Or if, for example, you have a pen and all of a sudden you might start writing with a pen. So whatever malacha, in the case of a nafach, a carpenter, he has his kurnus is his sledgehammer, and if he starts running around holding the sledgehammer, who knows, he might pass by, you know, one of his tables that he's in the process of constructing and give it a clap, and he violated a malacha d'oraisa of makom patish. Now, the Rambam here says v'chein, but I think this last v'chein in the Rambam is not a third answer to the question of why they establish muktzah, but rather it's an enhancement of the first explanation. He says, yesh miktzas mina'am, and here we're moving on to the top of the left column, she'enam balei umnios. They don't have any work. V'ein etzlam heker. There's no obvious resting here. V'mesh einosim malacha b'shabbos. Sherei b'telem gab b'chol. Had it been a weekday, they also would be home, you know, taking life easy, laying on the hammock, having three meals, you know, for the enjoyment. And they're not doing any malacha because these are people who are batel, and and they're not bali umnus. They are betalim. You know, the Gemara talks in Masechta Brachos about the asara batlani ha'ir. You know that every city has its batlanim. You know, people don't have jobs. You know, they take care of the gabos and make sure the shul is running properly and so forth. And therefore, says the Rambam Lachain, Asru gam al tiltul kelim, shekol adam mekayim. Everyone, even someone who's batel, he doesn't have a job, he still moves kelim around. Because how do you function in life unless you move your vessels around? Umifnei dvarim elim, for all the reasons that we explained, nagu be'isra tiltul. They established this isra tiltul. Now, if you take the first explanation of the Rambam, that we want to get to this point with the Shvisa Nikaris, then Mukta is a method to guarantee a Kiyuma Mitzvah of Laman Yanua. If you take the second explanation of the Rambam, where we're afraid he'll do a Malacha, then it's a Lotasa, not an essay, but a Lotasa. So I don't know if Mukta should be seen as a vehicle to achieve a Kiyum, a state of mind, a state of being, which is called menucha, or Muktzah is going to guarantee that he doesn't violate a malach on Shabbos. Now the Beis Yosef, in his Kesef Mishni, quotes the Ramach, one of the late Mishonim Rabbi Shekayim, who says, Lo yadati, I don't understand, minayin hotzi zeh. Where did the Rambam get this from? It's a very nice, creative, philosophical presentation, but it's not based on any sources. The Gemara itself gives us an explanation, and that is Mefurash Hatam the Isur Muktzah Gzeira Mishmotzah. The Gemara singles out Meleches Otzah, carrying, and that's the Gemara on Kuf Chaf Dalid Amud Beis, and it also appears in Beis Adaf Lamed Zayin. Tiltul Tzorech Otzah V'chein Hisig Arayvid and V'hosif Tam Zed. So the Ravid has also this double comment on the Rambam. First of all, where did the Rambam get this from, and why did he leave out the obvious source? And secondly, if you want to identify the real reason for Muktzah, the Tam is Shema Yotzi, that he might be tempted to carry it out from Tushas Yochin Tushas Rambam and violate Melechus Otzah. And by the way, this is not the only time that Chazal instituted a gzera because they're afraid of Hotzah. What would be a pretty famous classical case of a gzera mishum Hotzah? Anybody know what I have in mind? Does anybody know what gzera derabba is?
No.
For example, if let's say Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbos, do we blow the shofar?
No, we don't.
We don't. And for that matter, if the first day of Sukkot coincides with Shabbos, we don't take a lulav. And there are other cases of gzeira derabba. What gzeira derabba is gzeirat otzah. We're afraid that if you're allowed or obligated to blow shofar on Shabbos, then you'll carry it from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Yochid. And the same in the case of lulav. So meleches otzah is an outstanding malach in the following way. It's so common and so easy to forget about it and violate it, because you know, you just step over the line and you got something in your pocket and you cross the line from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah and you violate Meleches Otzah. So if you have an Eruv, that's fine. You know, so I come from a neighborhood called Flatbush, you're from Edgewood. I think Edgewood also has an Eruv, right? No. It didn't always have an Eruv. Right? Flatbush has an Eruv for who knows how many centuries, but it's always been contested. You know, there are those who rely on the Eruv and those who don't rely on the Eruv.
Yes, we had to institute an Eruv. We persuaded the Rabbani not to argue with it.
Correct. So again, there are places in the world that have a reliable Eruv, even in Chutz Laretz. But there are many places that don't have an Eruv, and Eruvim were not always as common as they are today historically, and Chazal were very sensitive to guarantee that a person lives his life in a little bit of a stifled kind of way on Shabbos, in a way that he's not going to cross the bounds and violate the Isra Hotzah. Even for the sake of a mitzvah, again, shofar is a mitzvah d'oraisa, lulav is a mitzvah d'oraisa on the first day. But nevertheless, Chachamim, with their authority, they suspended a mitzvah d'oraisa simply to protect us from violating for the possibility of violating the Melechus Hotzah. And here, according to the Ravid and Rabbi Shekayin, and basically it's a sugya in Kuf Chav Dalet, the Gemara says that the reason why Tiltul of Muktzah was prohibited by the Chazal is because of Hotzah. Magid Mishnah Kosov Shalom Nizkiru B'Gemara Taimei Arama B'Sof Dover Moda Aram L'Rayv Ramach. And according to Magid Mishnah, the Rambam at the end of the day agrees to all the other Rishonim based on the Sugya Lehedja in the Gemara Shabbos that the reason for Muktzah is because of Hotzah. Now we're going to come back to this again when we get to the flip side of the page, because what we're going to try to establish is that there's an Isra Achila in Muktzah, and that Isra Achila has nothing to do with the Gzeir of Hotzah. In any event, it would seem from the Ravid, from the Beis Yosef's language when he outlines and delineates these six categories of Muktzah, that you get the impression they're all included in one single Gzeira of Muktzah. There may be fine tuning and differences of nuances, but basically they all belong to the same Miksha Achas, the same entity called Muktzah. However, as I said before, it would seem that the fifth of the sixth category, that's number five, is Klisha Malachta Le'iser, is not really Miksha Achas. It's not really part of this matrix called Muktzah. It's a separate Iser tilt. Oh. Now we get, Shmuel, to your issue about Reb Shimon. Okay then?
Yes.
Fine. Now I'm skipping for a moment the paragraph that starts the Kvar, and I would ask you to do me a favor and remind me at the end to go back to that paragraph.
Where is it?
And we're going to start from Dehine. Okay, that's on page 248.
Five paragraphs down on the left side.
Five paragraphs down on the left side. Thank you, David, so much. He says the fine Dehine Bechol Sugis Muktzah, we have a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who asks Muktzah, Rabbi Shimon is Mekil, and he says, Lesley Muktzah. Now, it's a little bit misleading. You know, you walk away from the Gemara thinking, Rabbi Shimon, Lesley Muktzah, that Rabbi Shimon rejects the entire kit and caboodle of Muktzah. That's not true at all. In fact, I would say that Rabbi Shimon is on board for most of Muktzah, and he accepts the Isur Muktzah in almost all cases. It's hard to find the cases that he rejects Muktzah. We'll have Muktzah Machmas Mius as a possible category. We'll talk about Iska de Tamri, where he designated it for sale on the market and then he needed it for his table. There are a few and far between cases where Reb Shimon is Mekil and Muktzah. But by and large, Reb Shimon is very much on board with Muktzah, and he embraces all the cases and all the categories of Isur Muktzah. However, there is one halach in Muktzah, one principle, that Reb Shimon denies outright, and that's our migu. He doesn't have this business of migu, this katzoyle ben hashmashal, this katzoyle kuliyom. So according to Reb Shimon, if somewhere during the course of Shabbos the original reason for Muktzah was removed, the scenario changed, then there's no longer an Isur Muktzah. Now in the paragraph that says Uba Gemara Kuf Chav Ches, he says the following, that how do we paskin La Halacha in the Machlokas between Reb Shimon who lesley Muktzah and Rabbi Yehuda is very machmir in Muktzah, and Rav came up with a compromise formulation. And you know, whenever you come up with compromises, it's always a compromise. You always compromise something. And he says the following. There are two Isurim in Muktzah. There's an Isur Achila in Muktzah, and there's an Isur Tiltul in Muktzah. If you recall, we discussed this when we spoke about the principle of Yesh Muktzah L'Chatzis Shabbos, and Tosfos says Yesh Muktzah L'Chatzis Shabbos only applies vis-a-vis the Isur achilas mukta, but not vis-a-vis the isur tiltul mukta. So we see quite clearly that there are two categories of mukta. And Rav says that, you know what, when it comes to mukta b'achila, we got to be very careful about that. We have to be very machmir. We can accept the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. But when it comes to mukta of tiltul, that's already, relatively speaking, a lightweight kind of isur. And here, whenever Rav Shimon is mekil, we'll rely on Rav Shimon. So if you're talking about the isur achila, then Rav Shimon, if he allows you to eat this, claiming that it's not mukta, will be rejected. And who will we accept? Rabbi Yehuda. That there is mukta l'inyan isur achila. If there's machlok shrin Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon with regard to isur tiltul, and there's no relevancy to achila, then we're going to pass him like Rabbi Shimon l'kula.
Could you give us an example?
Sure. Sure. So take for example this issue about mukta l'chatzi shabbos, right? So what happened? You've got shemen, and it's dolik, correct? It's dolik. Now comes along. I'm sorry. Start all over again. Sorry. You have shemen. That's not dolik, okay? Okay. Sorry, I apologize the second time around. Now I got it. You have shemen that's dolik, and in the middle of Shabbos, you put a utensil underneath the ner, and the shemen drips into the ner. The ner now is a receptacle that collects the shemen.
The kli.
I'm sorry. When I say the nair, I mean a kli, a receptacle. Now, we have a principle called, according to one Mandi Omer in Beit Sochavav, Yesh Mukta L'Chatzi Shabbos. Which means that the kli now becomes a basis l'davaros.
But it was temporary.
So that's why Reb Shimon comes to the fore and says that mukta is only temporary. Why? Because we're dealing with tiltul. And here's a case where we're going to accept Rabbi Shimon, whose principle is that if you remove the cause of mukta, then you remove the isur mukta, and we're going to accept Rabbi Shimon with regard to tiltul. So this receptacle that has mukta in it, let's take the case of a beitzah. Supposing the beitzah gets removed from this kli, then according to Rav Shimon, you're allowed to move the kli. Or in the case of the sal, if the Afrochim jump onto the sal in the middle of Shabbos, when they jump off, Rav Shimon says you're allowed to move the sal. Here we're going to paskin like Rav Shimon. And we're going to say that as long as the cause of mukta is there and the beitz is in the kli, it's mukta. As long as the Afrochim are jumping on the sal, it's mukta. But once we remove the beitza, once the Afrochim jump off the sal, you're allowed to move the kli, you're allowed to move the sal. Why? Because that's tiltum. And when it comes to tiltum, we're going to accept Rav Shimon. Because Rav Shimon's shita is that when the cause of the mukta was removed, then the mukta is removed as well. But let's say we had an issue about Tamar de Iska. Tamar de Iska, we said, was the dates that he packaged for shipping, for marketing. Now he's hungry for dates. So here we're going to accept Rav Yehuda. Why? Because now we're talking about the Isra Achilas Mukta. And for some reason, when it comes to the Achilas Mukta, we're going to be Machmir, and we're going to pass it like Rav Yehuda.
But even if you just mentally designated some food to sell, you can't eat that much.
I don't know. That's a good question, David. For that, we have to really
package it up.
We're not far away from that, David. That's okay. On Daf Mem Hey. So we're on Daf Mem Dal. We're not that far. But you can't hold me responsible for Daf Mem Hey because I'm only on Daf Mem Dal. But let's take the classical case. He packaged it and it's in the crates. And, you know, he puts it on the side and, you know, Motzi Shabbos, you know, the ship is embarking. He's going to be down at the harbor with his packaged dates. But Shabbos, he needs a date. Not because he's single, but because he's hungry for dates. So then we're going to paskin here like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon would be making, and Rabbi Yehuda is going to be mach. I'll give you another example. He wants to take the shemen after the candle was extinguished and put it into his salad. We're going to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon would be making.
So why are we going with the minority opinion of Rabbi Shimon in Tiltol?
Well, let me ask you a question a little bit differently. Why are we splitting between Afila and Tiltol? Why are we saying, yeah, there's Machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, we're going to accept Rabbi Yehuda as far as Achila, we're going to accept Rabbi Shimon as far as Tiltol? It's a very strange kind of compromise. That's why I told you, compromises are very, you know, very compromising. Now, I would suspend our discussion on this until we get to the flip side of this page, even though I have an answer to your question based on what we've already discussed. Because in the Hare Kedem, he pointed out that Achila and Tiltol are two separate issues. Two different Cheftas of Isra. In the case of Achila, we're talking about an Isra that's inherent in the object. It's an Isra Achila like the veil and trefa. And that's very severe. In the case of Tiltol, we're talking about an Isra Gavra because of the fact that you might come and carry it out into Rosh Hashanah. But there's nothing inherent in the object that engenders an Issa Tiltol. Issa Tiltol is always an Issa Gavra. It's not in the Cheft.
I wonder how Rambam would answer that thought, because he's given a separate reason that you
right.
might come to
you. You're right. You know, that's a good point, but again, the Magen Mishnah says the Rambam never questioned this reason. He was just adding his own reason. It's fine. But I would suspend this discussion until we flip the page to the other side. And he says the following. The Marsha in Beitza, this is the last paragraph on the first page. He quotes a Tosfos. Kishem sheitira Torah kama malachas litzor chochol nefesh biyontif, kach mutu l'taltil muktzul litzor chochol nefesh. Tosfos is of the opinion that the heter ochol nefesh, which allows you to do, let's say, bishul, which would normally be a malacha d'oraisa on yontif, but for the sake of achila of ochol nefesh is muta, that heter would apply even as far as mukta is concerned. So I'm allowed to move mukta for the purpose of ochol nefesh. And the Marsha says it makes no sense, because in Masechta Beitza, from beginning to end, we find the laws of mukta, and we don't alleviate the laws of mukta to permit tiltul muktzah for the sake of achila. For example, the sugya at the very beginning of Masechta Beitza is about a piece of wood that fell off a tree and you want to use it for your campfire, and that's called nolad, and yet it's for the sake of eating, for the sake of making a fire, and you want to put your pot on the fire. We never found a heter ochol nefesh with regard to tiltul muktzah. Not only that, he says, the Gemara establishes that the law of muktzah on Yontif is even more chamur, more strict and severe than the law of muktzah on Shabbos. So how could Tosfos say that litzor chochol nefesh, you're allowed to violate the Issur Tiltol muktzah? Says the Marsha, you know what Tosfos has in mind? He has in mind tiltol muktzah as opposed to achilas muktzah. With regard to achilas muktzah, for sure, we're not going to allow you to violate the Isra Achilas Mukta for the sake of ochol nefesh. But with regard to Tiltol Mukta, that's where we could be more lenient on Yontif and call it ochol nefesh. So, v'chilek ha-marsha bein Isra Achila l'Isra Tiltol v'Isra Shimush b'mukta kol b'Isra Achila. Interesting. Remember I told you that he wants to take this piece of wood that fell off on Yontif and feed the campfire. That's called Achila. Why is that called Achila? I'm not eating wood. The fire is eating wood. But the concept of Achila, as far as Muktzah is concerned, incorporates any shimush, any use of the Muktzah, as opposed to moving the Muktzah and relocating it, which is only Tiltol, but using the Muktzah for your own benefit, that's called Achila in this context. And he says that when the Gemara says that if, let's say, you want to support your kedera, let's say you have a pot of food and it's a little bit wobbly, so you want to make sure that it stays straight and it's supported, so you want to support that kedera bibakas, Okay, what's bekas? Bekas is a split piece of wood that was cut off a larger piece of wood or a tree trunk for the purpose of fire. In other words, they used to take the log. Basically, bekas is a log. You following me? Not a lug. A lug is a measurement of liquids. A log in English. It has nothing to do with computers or anything like that. So this log is something that it's called a bekas that you feed into the fire. And if you do so, you're having shimush in this object. Or, for example, if you want to use that piece of wood now to support a kedera, do you remember the old times? You may have seen a picture of it. They used to have like a kind of a vessel that would hold on to the kedera so they remain steady over the fire. So that's what he wants to do. He wants to take a log here and a log there and place it on both sides, flanking the kedera and the pot, so it shouldn't tip over. You're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov. And why is that? And the answer is, the Gemara says, Sha'omed lahasaka v'lo l'shimush acher, because you designated this log for firewood to feed your fire and not for any other purpose. And therefore you're not allowed to use it to support your kedera. And here you're turning to the other side of the page. And he says that even though they were matir muktzah l'tzorchah chol nefesh, but here he's being mishtamish b'muktzah, that gives it the same status as achilas muktzah, and we're not going to be mekil with regard to achilas muktzah. And when I say achilas muktzah, what do I mean? Shimush b'muktzah. What's the flip side of achila / shimush? What's the other side of the equation? Tiltal. So in the case of shimush, which is achila, we're not going to allow that on Yom Tov. You can't use something that is mukta on Yom Tov. But if you want to just move it around, that's already something different. Then if you're moving it for the sake of ochel nefesh, we're going to allow it. Nimtza, and this is what I want you to underline, line 3. Shemeschalkim dine shimush b'mukta midine tiltol v'dine tiltol kile tfei. There's shimush b'mukta, which is called achila, and then there's tiltol mukta, and tiltol mukta is much lighter of an iser. And again, what we would say is that shimush b'mukta would be a violation of the iser hefta, and tiltol mukta is only an iser gam, which is a lower case violation. And now in the next paragraph he quotes two of the Gedolei Achronim, the Chasam Sofer and the Nesivus. They were contemporaries. The Nesivus is a little bit older, I think. And they both came to the conclusion that the Iser Mukta, as far as Achila, is a separate Iser, a category unto itself, derived from the Pasuk in Parashas Peshalach, V'hoyev yom ha-shishi v'echidim ha-sasher yaviv. Which means that when you enter into Shabbos and Yom Tov, you can use that which you prepared before Shabbos. But you can't use something that wasn't prepared before Shabbos. And that's as far as Achil is concerned. No mention of Tiltal here. It says, Ve'echinu es asher yaviu, that Pasuk is referring to Achil. In fact, what is the exact substance that they had to prepare before Shabbos? Don't all answer at once. It starts with a mem in Hebrew, an M in English.
Man?
Correct, the man. They had to prepare the man on Erev Shabbos. They weren't allowed to go outside into the machna there and outside the machna in order to collect the man. So the Torah says, Ve'chinu es asher yaviu. So you see that with regard to using something, and you know the shpitz, the most profound way of using something is by eating it, you need hachon. So the Chasam Sofer and the Nesivus learned from this pasuk, Ve'chinu es asher yaviu, v'yom ha-shishi v'yachinu es asher yaviu, that there's a separate Iser Mukta, which is the flip side of Ve'chinu es asher yaviu, that generates an Iser Achilas Mukta as a category unto itself derived from a verse in the Torah. Because it doesn't have hachon. Anything you want to use on Shabbos, the Torah is commanding you, has to have a hachana before Shabbos.
To eat.
to use. I'm going to use the word shimush, because again, we're now expanding our definition of achila to include any shimush. I mean, when I take this piece of wood and I use it lisfochas akadera, that's not achila in a strict sense. He's not eating the wood, but it's called achila so far as it's shimush. Then we get to tiltul. Tiltul is not shimush. When I move something, I relocate, I'm not using it. I may use it eventually, but right now at this state, I'm not using it. So that would not come under the Issa Achila. And the Pasuk Mechira Sesha Yavi would have no bearing, no relevance to tiltul. But now we go back in time. All the way back to the time of the Novi Nechemya. And Nechemya, together with his Bezdin, instituted an Issa Tiltul. Not in the Torah. Again, if you're looking for books in the Torah, you'll find it in one Pasuk. But that pasuk is only referring to what? Achila slash shimush. You want to use the object, you need achila. Now we're talking about being metaltal the object. You won't find any source for that in the Torah itself. No verse in the Torah. But Nechemya and his bezdin made a gzera that you shouldn't allow tiltal in certain cases, because who knows what's that going to lead up to. But that's not the real spitz Iser Muktzah. The real McCoy Torah biblical Muktzah, which is the opposite of Hachana, is Shimush, to use the object. That's prohibited. Now we have a separate Gezerah of Nechemya of Tiltul. In fact, Nechemya went a little bit too far. And eventually Klal Yisrael rejected it. And there was a point in which Nechemya wanted to institute the following law, that you're only allowed to move kelim in the process of eating on Shabbos. Don't move any other kelim. Then he loosened his belt a little because he saw that they couldn't do it. So he allowed you to move kelim as long as it's Litzorch Heter. And even if it's not Litzorch Achila, and then he even removed that. And then he even said, well, even if it's Litzorch Iser, as long as you're doing it Litzorch Makomo, and so forth, and so on, it's a whole history here about how this went back and forth until finally it landed where it landed. But it's all the Issa Tiltul, which is a gzera of Nechemya Beis Dino Atu Hotza. And that's the Gemara on Kuf Chav Gimel Amid Beis. Shegazru Mitchilu Shalom Taltul Shum Davar. You shouldn't move anything. There are only certain kli achil, like a spoon and a knife and a fork. That's the only thing you're allowed to move. Then chazu v'itiru, and they expand and they allow you to move other kelim, and then other kelim, and other kelim. Until finally, it ended up with the Isur Tiltul Muktz as we know it, and that's Gzeira Mishum Hotza. And the Rambam, as we saw earlier, adds his own reasons in addition to the Gzeira Mishum Hotza. Now we're ready for Rashi and Beitza, because now we're ready to postulate, or at least suggest the possibility that Muktzah might be Doraisa. But again, if Muktzah is Doraisa, then what kind of Muktzah, what category of Muktzah are we dealing with? Shimush, not Tiltul. Tiltul, undeniably, explicitly, is a Gzera Derabbanan Atu Hotza. But Shimush and Kol Shekein Achila might just be Doraisa. That's what he has over here in the paragraph that starts the Beresh Beitza. You have that? It says Beitza Shenolda B'yontif Beis Hillel Omrim Lo Teochel. What does it mean Lo Teochel? An Isra Achila. And the reason for this Isra Achila, which is called Muktzo or Nolad, the Gemara quotes Rabba. Rabba says Mishum Achana. What does it mean Mishum Achana? When was this egg prepared? It didn't, you know, the egg didn't during just, what? What did he say, Shmuel?
It appeared during him.
Correct, but when was it prepared? Meaning the egg has to ripen, it has to develop.
Before.
Right, on Chol, on the wheat thing. So the question is, was there a preparation on Yontif itself? One could argue that no, the egg was already complete and it was ready to be hatched and laid on Friday, on Erev Yontif. But one could also add that maybe the final The final preparation, the final development took place on Shabbos. And entering into Shabbos, I didn't have the egg. It was not accessible. And therefore, it's nolad, it's muktzah. It's lacking in what? Hachana. That's the key word. And insofar as it's lacking in hachana, this is called hachana de Rabba, because again, it's famous in the name of Rabba. V'hoya v'yom ha-shishi v'echidu es-ashi-aviyu Asura beitza min ha-Torah. Please underline those two words, min ha-Torah. Why? Because it's lacking in v'echidu es-ashi-aviyu. You didn't prepare it yesterday, because yesterday the hen was pregnant, but it didn't lay the egg. El Shemin HaTorah Asura Beitza Rak B'yontiv Shechalios B'yom Rishon. Alright, this now becomes complicated. This is called Hachana de Rabba Ein Shabbos Mechin L'yontiv. In other words, whatever was necessary for the development of the egg took place a day before the egg was laid, it was hatched. And in this case, if Yontif was on a Sunday, then the preparation for this egg was achieved on Shabbos itself. And we have a principle called Ein Shabbos Mechin LeYontif. And according to Rabbah, that's a Doraisa, because the Torah says, V'hoya v'yom ha-shishi, yom ha-shishi is Chol, v'echinu es asher yaviu, on Chol you prepare it, Chol Mechin LeShabbos, Chol Mechin LeYontif, but Ein Shabbos Mechin LeYontif. So when you have Shabbos and then Yontif, Shabbos itself could not be the preparatory stage for this egg that's going to be laid on Sunday. And that's an Issur D'oraisa. Mishum Sharei Nolda B'Yom Rishon, the egg was laid on Sunday, which was Yontif. Im Kein Gomra B'Mei HaTarnagolis, it was completed in the kishkis of the hen, Yom Echad Kodem, let's say 24 hours before it was laid. So if the egg was laid at 9 a.m. on Yom Rishon, which is the first day of Yontif, it was prepared at 9 a.m. on Shabbos morning. V'alzei Alfinan, and here we have a derivation, V'hoya b'yom ha-shishi v'echinu, Chol mechin l'Shabbos Yontif. The Torah says, Yom ha-shishi, which is Chol, you can prepare for Shabbos Yontif. But ain't Yontif mechin l'Shabbos, the ain't Shabbos mechin l'Yontif. So, for example, if let's say Yontif fell out on Friday and the egg was laid on Sunday, I'm sorry. If Friday is Yontif and the egg was laid on Shabbos, that would also come under the Hachana de Rabba. Why? Because then Yontif is being mechin for Shabbos. If Yontif is on Sunday and the egg was laid on Sunday, then Shabbos is being mechin for Yontif. And we have a principle, Ein Shabbos mechin l'Yontif, v'ein Yontif mechin l'Shabbos. L'chein yesh isra hachana, and it's called Hachana de Rabba. V'koshim kein madu v'chol beitza shenolda v'yom rishon muteres, for nigmarei achanose b'Shabbos. What happens when an egg gives birth on Sunday?
Chicken.
To a chicken, I meant to say. So what did I say, an egg?
Yeah.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad, Harvey, you were paying attention. I'm very, very proud of you. I always make these mistakes in order to just see if you're paying attention. So the chicken laid the egg on... The chicken laid the egg on Yom Rishon, correct? Now, if the chicken laid the egg on Yom Rishon, when was the egg prepared?
Shabbos.
On Shabbos. Now, we have a principle, Ein Shabbos Mechin L'Yontif, and certainly Ein Shabbos Mechin L'Chol. Isn't that a logical kavachomer? So how can we eat any of the eggs that were laid on Sunday? You know, the eggs that were laid on Shabbos, okay, we'll eat it after Shabbos. But when are you going to eat the eggs that are laid on Sunday? There's no ben hashmosh to be matir. It's going to be an isa chefta without a dom shesh lo matir, nothing. So Rashi answers that yom chol su'udosav enom tshukas hachon. When is there an Easter for another day to prepare for this day, when this day needs a preparation? If this day doesn't need a preparation, then we don't care if it was prepared in a different day. So the Easter of Hachana de Rabba only applies when, as a result of the Hachana, you benefit from that Hachana, because now you have something that requires Hachana, and you're going to benefit from the achana of yesterday, which was either Shabbos or Yom Tov. But in the case of Yom Rishon, I don't need achana. I can eat anything on Yom Rishon. I don't need any achana. Is that what we have here? Now, the balance of this introduction, and he has something very important on the left column in the name of the Igli Tal, is about this, what I call a little bit of a jump. What do I mean by a jump? There's a gap here. Rashi in Masechta Beitza, in the Sugya of Hachana de Rabba, is talking about an Isur, which is again an Isur Torah, to enjoy the Hachana of Shabbos on Yontif, or vice versa. So if Yontif is on a Sunday, I'm eating something which was prepared on Shabbos. That I understand. Now we have to go a step further, and here's where there's a bit of a gap. How do they say it? In London, they say, mind the gap. I don't know if that, right? The gap is that now I want to know about something that didn't have any hachana going into Shabbos. And that's classical muktzah. So why is that muktzah? And the answer is because it doesn't have hachana. So it's interesting. There are two sides of a coin. And they're both correct, and they're both emanate from the same source. Number one, if I need a hachana, I have to have a hachana from chol. And number two, if I need a hachana, I can't have a hachana from Shabbos Yom. So here we have two cases. We have the case of a basis shenol to be on Rishon Yontif. And since I need a hachana, I can't have a hachana of Shabbos, which in the case of an egg was the day before. And I have a case on Shabbos or Yontif of something that wasn't Mukhan, like the Beitza itself. It wasn't prepared before Shabbos and Yontif because it wasn't laid yet. And that also is a result of this same Yisod of Echidu HaSashem Yaviv, that you can only enjoy on Shabbos and Yontif that which was prepared before Shabbos and Yontif. Again, it can't be prepared by a Shabbos and Yontif because Shabbos and Yontif can't be a day of preparation in any event. But if it's chol, then it has to have been prepared already by chol. Everything needs hachon. Alright, Rabosa, we'll stop here because I want to have new energy to finish this up tomorrow, believe it. And if you get a chance to just go over it and maybe even make some progress. Okay, then? Alright, good.